All right. Well, good day, everybody. As always, we appreciate you joining us. I'm Corey Worden, and you're listening to the ASSP Healthcare Practice Specialties Health Beat podcast. And today we're also recording in association with the AOHP, or the Association for Occupational Health Professionals in Healthcare, Caring for Healthcare Professionals podcast. So we're going to be talking with a lot of great people and got a lot of great information. So today we got fantastic guest. Today we're talking to Pete Suska, and he does a lot of great work with organizational leadership and management and process and improvements and all kinds of great stuff. So we're going to be talking about all the stuff that he does and how that relates to healthcare and how that relates to safety and how we can use that to, you know, benefit the whole organization as opposed to just trying to continually manage all these silos and all these competing interests. So we're going to get into that without any further ado. Pete, if you would, I don't want to speak for you. If you could kind of give our listeners an introduction, yourself, your career, education, background, experience, anything that you want to put out there, we appreciate it.
Well, Corey, thanks for having me today. I appreciate it. I've been in health and safety and operations management and functional leadership world for over 40 years. We were just talking, I started in the fire service a very long time ago. From there, went into hazmat. From there, went into corporate safety management and a manufacturing environment and service environments. And then I managed quality. I managed engineering. I've done all kinds of, you know, functional leadership. And I've been an executive in corporations where I had P&L responsibility. So I've really kind of seen organizations from all different sides, which I think helped evolve me, not just into a safety professional, but into an organizational professional, because I've always been looking for the reasons behind things and the reasons that connect things. And from that, I've kind of created a relationship diagram and process that I use to help people see the connectiveness of things in an organization that are many times treated as separate and distinct, treated as anomalies, or a quality issue is really different than a safety issue, is really different than patient treatment issue, whatever it is. And if you back them up, the reasons for them organizationally are very much similar. So that's what I do, is I kind of help organizations, or executives, leaders, all the way down to first line supervisors, really structure the organization to align with their values, so that when these processes and programs and systems all start to get deployed, they get deployed together rather than separately, which then creates, when you do it separately, it creates forks in the road. It creates choices for people. And you don't want people choosing between being productive and being safe, or, you know, being efficient and being, cost effective and all of those things. You know, you don't want them in competition with each other. And if we do them separately, they are. So that's pretty much what I do. I'm in the safety world significantly, but I use safety as kind of the door to open all these other things up. And because safety is such a great way to see the health of the organization as a whole.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of interaction and a lot of integration that goes on there. So could you kind of expand on that, go like a little bit deeper about how that relates? So for example, like if you're talking about a hospital, you know, how would you explain that in terms of, you know, optimizing organizational processes so that it kind of decreases those potential conflicts between, you know, like you said, you got quality, you got patient safety, you got infection prevention, you got risk management. How does this work to make everybody kind of more harmonious, so to speak?
Well, you know, there's harmonious by design, yeah. and there's the rework. Okay. And I think many organizations are probably in the rework. which is, okay, we're somewhat dysfunctional in the way that we deploy all of these values, and it's creating this competition between values and this competition between people and this competition between measurements and expectations and timelines and all costs and you know, budgets and everything. That's by design, and I hate to say it, and it's because all of these things are parallel. So it's, yeah. Do I help people with redesigning their organization? Sure. But I think from a listener perspective, it's probably better to start from the outcomes and work your way back up again. And I think one of the things that's a challenge in the safety profession is many times we try to provide solutions ahead of agreed to problems. And what I mean by that is the first step is getting everybody to agree to the fact that something is a problem worthy of being fixed, changed, prevented, and not get ahead of it with providing solutions. Whether it's wearing a respirator or doing the process differently, the why, everybody has to understand that is this an acceptable risk or unacceptable risk? And do we all measure risk the same way? And can we all communicate and talk the same way? If we're not talking the same language, then we're not going to agree. So to me, a lot of times it starts by getting organizations to understand and be clear about what they expect. And that goes back to many times policies or value statements. So what is it you're really looking for here in your safety policy, in your patient treatment policy, in your all of these policies? How do they, what are the expectations of them? Okay. And then how do those get deployed out into the organization? And they get deployed out through systems and processes, the way we go about doing work. And unfortunately, if the organization is siloed, those are separate and distinct, that the way that we go about managing patient welfare and the way that we go about managing employee welfare are two completely different realms, managed with two completely different systems, completely different people, completely different objectives, measures, everything. Okay. And therefore, it sets them up to be in competition with each other. And you probably see that. So what we've got to realize if we come at it from backing into it is the outputs of those processes when they don't, when they're unwanted outputs, when we don't get what we want out of them. If we can walk them back through a common way of thinking, and what I try to do is I try to get a team of people who all do causal analysis the same way, taking a look at every single thing that doesn't go as expected. So it, you know, if you've got measures in your healthcare organization where you're measuring things like admitting or discharging or cleaning or setting up an operating room or whatever it is, if those things are all not going the right way and you've got these anomalies or nonconformities or whatever you want to call them, if we had a group of people looking at all of those, patient safety, worker safety, everything, looking at all those the same way, and following the same path to get to the reasons, then what they would see is the reasons are common. And until we can get a group of people talking about the common reasons, can we get a group of people talking about common solutions? So that's typically how I go about helping organizations is working from problems. And everybody values in a reactive organization, which many are today, people are focused on problems and problem solving, not problem preventing, problem you know, firefighting, okay? And if we're not fighting the fires in a balanced way, we're creating tomorrow's fires because what we're doing is we're forsaking some values for the sake of the value that's on fire. And when we do that, we create tomorrow's risk and tomorrow's fire. And then we just keep not only fighting fires, but creating fires. So I don't know if that makes sense, but that's pretty much where I start in most organizations simply is to try to get everybody together agreeing that all of these anomalies, though different, should be looked at the same way and backtrack the same way. And then I create that process for them where they can now start to have a common language. And that first common language is process health. the way that we design processes, if we do not design them balanced across all the values, then the way that we deploy the process is creating risk. Not maybe not risk for the process that we've designed, but risk for other values, because those values were not included in a balanced approach to deploying that process. And that's where the common language starts to, be self-evident is process issues. You know, we don't follow procedures well here. Well, if we don't follow procedures well here, we don't follow onboarding procedures, we don't follow patient safety procedures, we don't follow employee safety procedure, where I'm going. So that's probably the easiest way to kind of get that common ground and common understanding of where to go to change the organization.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's it's always really interesting. That's one thing I've done my best to explain a number of times in my career, at least, is how when we're looking at potential challenges, you know, whether it be a physical safety issue or a bio safety issue or people are getting incorrect billing, or there's an environmental issue, or even people, you know, they got the wrong tray from the nutritional services, got to their room, you know, and any of these things that can go wrong, any way you're looking at that, you've got the potential hazard or the challenge, then you've got the procedure or the process is expected to prevent that from happening. And then you've got to communicate that to people so they know what to do. Then you're going to validate that that's being done properly. And if it's not being done properly, something's probably going to go wrong. Or if the process isn't achieving what it's supposed to, then we want to identify that early. Then you've got your lagging indicators, so you know what's already gone wrong and the precedents. And then you've got your analysis, so you can figure out why it went wrong and how to fix that. Then you go back to the front and do the whole thing again. And that like you said, you know, that works whether you're talking about somebody got hurt, or if you're talking about we got adverse media coverage, or we got a social media trend that we don't like about us, you know, or any of this stuff. So all those things working together, it definitely helps, and that prevents those issues where you'll, like you said, you know, you'll have people that are, they say, well, my job here is to promote and develop something, you know, whether it's worker safety, patient safety, risk management, whatever. And whether consciously or not, you know, they find themselves going, well, you know, I need to promote this, and therefore I can't commit resources or energy to the other thing, because that's going to, whether it does or not, it creates that perception. It's going to take away from their thing, you know, and then all of a sudden you got people, whether they mean it or not, they find themselves saying things, oh, don't worry about worker safety because we got to worry about this instead. Or, you know, oh, if you take care of yourself and you prevent the worker safety issue, then by default, you're taken away from the patient or vice versa. You know, it's like, no, it's not like that. It's not pie where, you know, there's only so much of it. And if you take your piece of pie, somebody else doesn't get it. It's like, no, everybody can work together to achieve the same means and improve the whole system. Have you found that kind of vibe in healthcare organizations where there's, you know, those type of competing interests and potential challenges?
I find that vibe in many organizations.
Yeah. What are some examples? Yeah.
It's not unique to healthcare. You know, I work with a lot of safety executives, and safety is a great place to start. For example, one of the things that organizations try to build is ownership at the coal face, right? So if you're a first line mm-hmm. supervisor, or if you're, you know, managing service providers, to get those service providers to own all of those imperatives. Right. And mm-hmm. to basically help design better processes because now they are owners of the process, not just deployers of the process. And that's a really big change in an organization, you know, to change an organization from leaders telling people what to do to people that do the work, understanding and owning what to do. And then the other folks in leadership support them. Okay. And I always tell executives, you know, you may make the first decisions, but your people make the last. And the last decisions are the ones that count. You can make some great thoughts up in the office up there, but on the floor where people are deploying in the real world, they're going to make their own decisions. So if what you're doing is not aligned to their world, then they're going to make their own world fit, right? They're going to make the processes fit their world. And I think that it is also a function of the siloed nature of the organization being split up and people not cross-talking well. And I think one of the things that drives people further apart is the fact that we're measuring these silos separately. They're looking vertically at what they have to do, heads down vertical, okay? And even safety is in that world, okay? We're focused on getting our people safe and doing all of these things to do that. And if your head is vertical, business and organizational decisions get made horizontally. Okay, if you're a service provider and you got to make a decision, being somebody getting out on time, them getting contaminated, a cost issue, you have to balance all that yourself. It's a very difficult challenge. If the system is designed to keep it balanced for you, then your job becomes a heck of a lot easier. But these elements of the organization are pulling against each other, which then creates these choices for these folks that are difficult to make. And then we look at punishing them because they're making bad decisions. No, we're setting them up to make bad decisions. So I think one of the things that I look at is instead of creating these functional objectives, create cross-functional objectives. Okay, this is something that we're going to work on together. And we're going to get measured on by how it works by the service provider, how it works in the service provider's world, not whether you complete it or not, not whether you think it's effective or not, whether they think it's effective and effective at balancing all of these imperatives. That's the only way this is going to backwork itself to people having to work together, is if they're being measured by their ability to create a sound and balanced mode of operation for the service providers. It's the only way it's going to work. I mean, yeah, we do our best to try to get people to talk together and work together, but they don't really have to. And you know, metrics drive people's behavior, and I think it's about time that we start to put some of these metrics together. And you've got a pretty, you know, if you take a healthcare or you take a college environment, you got administration, and then you've got the well-educated people that believe they understand how to do what they need to do. And they're not as much worried about profitability. They're worried about taking good care of people, right? Providing knowledge, providing healthcare, doing the right thing, okay? Creating no harm, okay? They're not, in the back of their head, they're not saying, how much is this going to cost? How much time is it going to take, all of that. And so there's a little bit of a competing set of priorities between the folks that are trying to run the business and the folks that are trying to provide the service. And I think that's where the common ground of you know, integrating those things, those measures come into play.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting. There's a couple things I noted as you were speaking. The first one is, I always call it the 3 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday syndrome, is, you know, especially with like high reliability principles, is, you know, we want to be able to set the expectations, you know, so that people understand, okay, here's where the potential failure can happen. We have the proper expertise so that we know how to prevent that. And then we're going to create that decentralization so that people have what they need to work safely or to prevent any other issues, if it's not necessarily a safety issue. And those things are going to work within the operations that they're expected to do. And that way, if it's 3 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday and there's nobody else around, that person has the knowledge, skills, abilities, equipment, and the empowerment to make the best possible decision for that operation. And like you just said, that way you're setting them up for success, and they're able to make the decision and critically think for what works in their environment, as opposed to, well, this is what I was told, but what I was told came from the 27th floor of the ivory tower and has no context to what's happening right here, at 3 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday. So that's always something I think about. And then the other thing I noted was you were talking about the management structures, and that's always something that is always hit home with me. I did an article about this a couple years ago, and with mixed management, you've got like you said, you've got those vertical structures. So for example, let's say you have a healthcare system. So you've got this corporate system, and then you've got 12 acute care hospitals. So they're stacked up one after the other. You got, hospital A, hospital B, hospital C, and each one has their own CEO, and each one has, emergency department. They've got patient care unit. They've got radiology. They've got endoscopy. All down the line. But then you've got your corporate headquarters, and the corporate headquarters has its own. They got communications. They've got I'm drawing a blank now. They
Finance,
got
they've got it. Yeah, right. Yeah.
finance,
HR,
security,
HR.
HR.
Yep,
Yeah, they got
yep.
all their
Functions.
departments, and one of those will be safety, of course. And so if you're the safety person and you're trying to go from hospital to hospital and get the safety developed, and the hospital is saying, well, I was waiting to hear the marching orders from corporate. But then you go talk to corporate and they're saying, now the hospital's supposed to take care of that. And so both sides are thinking somebody else is going to do it. Meanwhile, nobody's doing it. And then the safety person's going around the hospital system going, well, why don't you have a respiratory protection program? They go, well, corporate didn't tell me to do it. Corporate says, well, the hospital's supposed to do that. And so that mixed management structure is intended to make the organization more effective has actually completely disabled the organization. And so it's always been a trip to me how that can work, and the way you articulate that, it shows, how that can be improved for sure.
Yeah, Corey, I will tell you, it's not much different than the manufacturing world or anyone else. You could take all of those hospitals and make them facilities. This is a common thing. And one of the things that I found out, I do a lot of, we'll call it leadership training, but it's organizational kind of recalibration, is I find out that people really don't understand or don't have well-evolved roles and responsibilities that integrate all of these values and what their role is in deploying them. And so that person who's saying, I was waiting for or whatever it is, maybe doesn't have a clear role of who, of when they should be and what they should be making decisions on. And fire service is a great example, right? If you take a look at what you just talked about, corporate down to right, I could say that each of those hospitals is a fire company working on a fire scene that has lieutenants and captains and pump operators and all of those folks all doing their things on the same fire scene. And if we don't have a common way of communicating and everybody knowing what realm of decision they have and how to make decisions in that realm and communicating what they're doing so everybody knows what else is what everybody's doing, then it's chaos. Okay. Though we all look like we're putting the fire out, we're really not. We're probably risking our own lives, we're risking property, we're wasting water, all of that stuff. It's the same thing. Right. So it really comes down to backing up the organization and saying, okay, let's just have us all speaking the same language about what it is our values are, how we're measuring those values, and whose job it is to protect those values at each level of the company or organization. And then here, we're going to teach you how to do that. And then our metrics are going to be indicative of how good we're balancing those things. And one of the things that I see, not just in healthcare, is that organizations do not have a defined way of making risk versus benefit decisions from the corporate office on down to the healthcare provider. How are you supposed to be making decisions? What is the method that you should use to balance risk versus benefit? You know, if I don't have the right, hoist, should I pick up this 300-pound patient myself? Or should I wait for the hoist? Well, it's a decision of risk versus benefit, right? I am going to go risk my back. I'm going to risk straining myself. Are they in a cardiac arrest? Are they not breathing well? Is this an emergency, right? So we're going to be able to size up the situation, make decisions balancing their well-being with our well-being, and making the right decision in that time frame. And that scales up and scales down very well, but that tool is non-existent. And I think what you've got is this variety in perception of how to make the right decision, which gives you a variety of success and failure. And you're probably seeing that, right? And we think we're going to chase it with training. No, training's after the fact. If you don't know what your role is, you don't know how to make decisions, then what am I training you on?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I like how you bring that up with the perceptions and everything. That's we were just talking about that earlier before we went on record. Is, you know, that tends to be a cultural situation in healthcare. And I know you mentioned it as well from EMS and fire service as well, as when there's that unspoken implication that people feel like they're supposed to sacrifice themselves for the cause, you know, and that's important that, like you said, they understand the role is here's what we're trying to accomplish, and here's when you're expected to use this control and critically think through the situation, and then here's those situations where there's a, you know, cost versus benefit situation, and there may be a elevated risk for the greater good, but like you said, yeah, if people don't understand those basic circumstances, then it's much easier to make an unnecessarily dangerous decision.
Yeah, and I see this everywhere, Corey. This is not just healthcare specific or emergency response specific. It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We have values. Everybody's got them posted on their walls somewhere. Okay,
yeah.
And we've got value delivery people in value delivery silos, and they're doing their best to train and develop and organize and do all that. But the reality is the decisions of the provider have to be made across all of those values, not vertically. We're not just making a safety decision. We're not just making a profit decision. We're not just making a patient decision today. We're making an everything balanced decision today. And there's no process for that. There isn't. Mm-hmm. And what it takes is a way to critically think about risk versus benefit with some kind of realms of good enough, not good enough, you know, a kind of a control chart looking thing, right? That says, okay, you can't go below this level on ethics, or you can't go below this level on safety. And right, it's some way to say, okay, what's a great balance point here? And an easy way to do that. You know, like I told you, I worked in the fire service. We have a way of doing that. And we have a prioritized way of thinking, and it's scalable from the fire chief right down to the person on the hose. They use the same process scaled to their realm, and it works. And I think we should be doing that in healthcare. We should be doing that in a lot of organizations. And I think it goes back to, I go in a lot of organizations where somebody in the safety realm has a risk assessment process. They've done risk assessments. They've got all these charts and all of these numbers and all of this stuff. And then I go talk to folks in the delivering services, and I say, "What's your biggest risk, and how do you determine risk?" And they say, "Well, it's the last time something hurt me. The last time I got a, you know, I got last time I got hurt. Last time we had an accident. Last time we had right." So they're measuring risk by frequency of occurrence, not potential for harm. So whatever we're doing in the system hasn't gotten to them. Okay, they're not speaking risk the same way you're speaking risk. They're speaking risk from perception. Okay, and when you're speaking risk for perception, that risk is all over the place because everybody's got a different perception because everybody's got a different history and different experience set, right? And you can't have that if you're all trying to go to the same place.
Yeah, it's all subjective.
Yeah, it is. Go today. Go down to the folks doing the work who are at risk and see what their perspective of risk is and your perspective of risk and see if they align.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting you say that. Yeah, I remember this was, in any experience or career or whatnot, there's always those moments where you always remember them and you go, oh my goodness. There's one time about 10 years ago now, something like that, 10-ish years ago, there was somebody I knew that was, they were in a position of, pretty decent responsibility and they were in charge of a lot of people. And they had sat down and they said, you know what? I won't say which department because it will kind of give away what it is, but they said, this department, they haven't had this bad thing happen for a while. And they said, if I can get that department to go the rest of the year without this bad thing happening, then I'm going to be able to say that they're now considered a low risk department. And I said, you understand that hazard presents itself constantly. I said, just because it hasn't hurt somebody for a while doesn't mean the risk goes down. Is it that just means that the severity went down a little bit, the frequency is still there, and like you said, it's that function of frequency and severity, and that's got to be objective because when you get into the subjectivity,
Yes.
that's what we had with the pandemic. We had a lot of people that go, well, I've been alive for X amount of years and I've had a lot of colds, but I never went to the hospital, so I don't think this is going to be dangerous. But then you have someone like my family, for example, where both the kids were in the PICU for an extended period of time, so we know how severe these things can be. And there was a huge variance in perceptions of that risk. So yeah, it's interesting how you put that.
Imagine somebody in the pharmacy of your hospital making a decision on how many milligrams of something somebody needed by their perception.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, right? You never do that, right? It's a science based on weight and all of these other things, right? Why isn't safety like that? Okay, and so we need to give people simple tools to be able to evaluate their situation, come up with, where they're at, risk versus benefit, and make the best decision possible in the situation that they're in. And then we need to evaluate how people make decisions and how people have made decisions, because that is a true measure of effectiveness of the control. If a decision is a control point, then we need to measure how effectively we're making decisions, not the outcome. Okay, and I tell people all the time, you can have a bad process and get really good outcomes for long, long periods of time. Look, I can look at my phone and drive my car faster than the speed limit for years and not get in a fatal accident, not even get in an accident. Okay, so am I a good driver?
Exactly.
No, no. But if you
There's a
measure me
lot.
by motor vehicle record, you'd say, hey, this guy's a good driver, right?
That's right.
Absence of outcome, or negative outcome, right?
That's
So
right.
that's the transference I think that the safety profession is in the process of trying to make. And it's an organizational, educational transference or transformation of getting people to see risk of harm and the harm the same. Okay, because if you take a look at the metrics of how we measure healthcare, we're measuring outcomes, or and businesses are measuring outcomes all the time. So incidents and outcomes match pretty well. You know, did you do this? Didn't you do that? Right? It's an outcome. Okay.
Yeah.
Is what is your capacity for doing this well? Right? How effective is the process to get us to the right outcome? That is now a predictive mechanism of creating risk and creating an outcome. And so that's where I go back to process health. Process health and understanding process health is a risk predictive mechanism, not just a risk measurement mechanism. I can predict risk by looking at the health of the way you do things or have designed things, if you will. I don't have to wait to go out into your operation. I can see it in the way that something is designed. And I think that's where we need to start to move, because that's the common language that goes to ethics, goes to finance, it goes everywhere. It's the common language, and we need to start speaking a common language in every organization.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, I like how you put that a minute ago. Also, I noticed you were, when you mentioned how, you know, these things have got to be balanced, is in a lot of cases I've seen in the past, you know, there'll be something that's obviously, you know, headed the wrong direction, and somebody will go, oh, well, you know, it's a business decision, you know. And I remember there's been plenty of times I found myself going, well, you know, that's a rationalization, you know. It's entirely possible to rationalize things away, but the question is, you know, if the bad thing does in fact happen, is that rationalization still going to hold up, you know? And in a lot of cases, you know, legally, morally, ethically, it's probably not, but it does happen because those things aren't balanced. You know, you've got the business decision, the safety decision, you know, those things have all got it. They all impact each other.
Yeah. And, you know, I bet a lot of times the service providers or look at business decisions and with a negative connotation, because they're trying to provide a good service to a patient, and the business stuff gets in the way. But the reality is they should be business people as well as service providers. Everybody needs to balance those things. And if there's a place where they're getting imbalanced, then you're creating risk in one form or fashion. I mean, look, you're not going to be able to provide good service if we don't have a budget to provide the things you need to provide good service, right? So it's a balancing of all those things that allows you to do what you do well. It pays your salary. Okay, so until we can balance those things, these organizations are at risk.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's been a common thread lately in a lot of conversations is, and again, it goes back, you know, the high reliability principles is, you know, one of those is sensitivity to operations. And that's, like you just said, that's where it's, if you're only looking at it from one perspective, it's entirely possible. We say, okay, our mission is exclusively to lower the risk as much as possible. And you say, okay, well, we can eliminate the risk, but then the objective is not going to get accomplished. You know, we made it so safe that we can't do anything.
Yeah, we're not going in the patient's room, and right?
Because
it's too risky.
That's right. Yeah, we say, or you know, there's too much. Or on another perspective, you're talking about errors. You know, we say, well, there's too many errors. Okay, well, remove all the humans, and there's no more human error. You know, it's a yeah, it's all a balance. You know, you got to figure out, okay, how do we make it as reasonably safe as we can while still accomplishing this, unless you get into the, you know, the risk matrix and you start talking about risk avoidance. In that case, you've made a conscious decision. Well, we're not going to accomplish this, you know, because it's just too dangerous, or it's too risky. That's one thing I've always said is it's important that, at least in my opinion, in a perfect world, every organization would be able to tell all their employees in a transparent manner that say, okay, here's all the different hazards. And so for each one, we've decided, risk control, risk acceptance, risk avoidance, risk transfer. And that way the employees can look at that and go, okay, I agree with that. Or if they go, wait a minute, you're accepting that risk? Wait, I don't want to work here anymore. I always thought that would be kind of an interesting place to work, but that level of transparency is very rare.
It is, and it goes back to the ownership thing that I was talking about, right? So if you don't feel that your service providers are owners of everything that needs to get done for the success of the hospital or the healthcare service, then again, they're making their own decisions in their own realm and in the moment, in the moment. And maybe it's what's good for them, maybe it's what's good for the patient, maybe it's Friday and I need to go home. I don't know. But if we're not setting them up in a balanced environment, or when it becomes imbalanced, how to get themselves back in balance, you're creating risk. And I don't look at I when it gets down to the level of somebody making a decision with a patient on their own safety, you got to give them simple ways of thinking about this stuff, not complicated risk assessment things. Okay. It's simple size up, okay? It's the go, no go, or go slowly, or whatever it is, right? And it's easy tools, simple tools to be able to make those decisions. That's what they need. Because they're not going to take the time to go through some kind of analysis. They need a stoplight chart kind of thing, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, set him up for success. Definitely think if everybody's it's like I used to joke when I was in the military, the Air Force had they probably still have it now, I don't know for a fact, but they had published this little book. It's called the Airman's Manual, and it was a requirement. Whenever we did a field exercise, you're supposed to carry the Airman's Manual in your pocket. And in the Airman's Manual, it had things. It had a section on,
All
how to
the
load a rifle. How
answers,
to how to and we used to joke because, we had this thing in your pocket. I said, I find it difficult or even impossible to believe that. If somebody is under fire, in combat, they're going to go in their pocket and take out the Airman's Manual and go, what's the procedure for react to ambush? Let me open the book and find out. And like you said, the same kind of thing there is, it's got to be, set up for success with actionable, effective tools and resources so that so they can make those decisions and not just
Yeah.
rely on subjectivity.
And it's that's a good example. And I see this in a lot of organizations where they want to blame the people that made the mistake, right? Made the bad decision, went the wrong way on the, at the fork in the road. And their reason for blaming them is they had the book. They gave them the training where you had the Airman's Manual, right? Or in Navy's Blue Jackets Manual, right? You had the book. We gave you all
That's
the
right.
training. Come on, what's wrong with you? You're a defective person. You know what I mean?
That's right. Can't you
And
read?
it's like they, it's right. It's like they've wiped their hands of the fact that there's a human reliability factor here and a lack of resiliency and all of this stuff that we didn't give them a situation that was fair or whatever it was, you know? Well, we gave them everything they needed, therefore it's their fault. And jump right to punitive action without really understanding what set this person up in the situation where they had to make a decision where they failed. Not just the decision they made, but what set them up.
What got him to that point?
Right, what got them to that point? And I guarantee that's not an anomaly. If you start from what put people in these situations, those are not anomalies. Those are you're going to see a lot of people being set up in bad decision point at bad decision points. Then you can start to agree that something bigger than that, right? Something bigger than that bad person. Effective person, whatever you want to call
Certainly. Yeah. That's definitely great conversation. And I know that there's plenty more of that.
There is.
So yeah, as always, you have a open invitation back here. For everybody listening, we're in the process right now. We're gonna get a kind of a interactive open access webinar coming up with Pete. So we're gonna be able to dig more into this, and everybody can chat with them on there. So that's gonna be fun. We're gonna schedule that for November. So we're gonna kind of tie it up today. But Pete, is there anything that for now, do you want to refer anybody to any of your articles or anything that you want to give them some take home work to do in between before the webinar?
Oh, homework. Yeah, great.
Yeah.
No, I guess I can provide you, I don't know what the easiest way, because I'm not sure it's very easy to get my articles off the ASSP website. It may not be easy, but I can give you a PDF of all of them. And if there's some way that you can attach it to this or make it available, we can give it out to anyone. And then, thank you for offering up that session, that interactive session. So what I would ask is, bring your problems, but not your safety problems per se, not your technical problems, your organizational problems. What makes it difficult for you and your team to deploy safety effectively in your organization? What are the organizational issues? Those are the things that we that I would really like to help people with, and if we can bring real world problems to the table, I think that would be great.
Absolutely. Yeah, certainly. And I have the all the articles that you sent. So what I'll do is I'll get those up into a place where we can link them, and then we'll put the link into the notes for the podcast.
Great, great.
So that'd be good. And we'll get the registration link up for the webinar and get that ready to go. So yeah, we certainly appreciate you having here today. And for everybody listening, if you haven't seen it yet, definitely check out the podcast. We're on anchor.fm/ASSP-HCPS-HealthBeat, and that is the Anchor channel. You can also find us on iPodcasts or Apple Podcasts, or I think that's what it's called now. You can just type in ASSP HealthBeat and it'll pop right up. And we got 38 episodes up now. And then also the AOHP is at anchor.fm/AOHP, and there's 39 episodes there. And you can find more info at aohp.org. And so we got a lot of cool stuff coming up on both ends with ASSP and AOHP. There's webinars, and then the AOHP National Conference is coming up in Austin, Texas in a next week. Matter of fact, I'm glad I remember that. I gotta drive to Austin. It's next week in Austin, Texas. So if you can make it there, we'd love to see you. But Pete, we definitely appreciate your time today, and we'll get everybody real soon. Anything you want to add last minute, Pete?
No, I thank you so much for the opportunity, and I hope I invigorated some folks out there to kind of move forward with some of this stuff.
Absolutely. That's a great conversation. All right. Well, we'll catch everybody real soon, and we'll see you on the webinar in November.
Take care.